Hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. So, the news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the headlines from around the world are as follows. Does Stonehenge deserve to be a World Heritage Site? This is the new big question. And yummy, ancient Tasmanians had wombats on their menu. Vandalism of petroglyphs in Utah is causing grave concern. And there's Bronze Age finds made in Cornwall. Volunteers are invited to help unearth a Neolithic mound in North England. And a group is set up to protect a prehistoric Clovis site in California. Well, back here in Scotland, ancient sites are at risk of erosion from the sea. European Paleolithic graves raise questions about human sacrifice, and excavations at a Cypriot site are now completed. A 2,000-year-old site in Ohio is to be auctioned off, and finally, a Hillfort heritage in Northumberland is revealed by a new book. A former British Transport and Heritage Minister is calling for Stonehenge to be removed from the list of World Heritage Sites. Salisbury's Conservative MP Robert Key says money for the overdue improvements is being diverted to the Olympics. He's now writing to the Chief Executive of UNESCO, who meet in June, saying that British government ministers should be called to account. He claims that government commitments to improve the site have not been met. A £600 million plan to drill a tunnel for the nearby A303 trunk road and build a new visitor centre had been on review for more than a year after Transport Minister Stephen Ladiman said that costs had risen too far. But those campaigning to preserve the unique archaeology of the region say the plan is only compromise that could work. Archaeologist and Labour Party activist Tony Robinson said that he was very worried about the future of Stonehenge. In an interview with the BBC's Politics Show, he accused government ministers of leeching on the iconic image of the monument to win the bid for the Olympics, only to let it down at the 11th hour. He continued that most politicians just don't get heritage, thinking that they can just leech on it, exploit it, and that it doesn't need tending. English Heritage, who run Stonehenge, do not dispute visitor facilities and access is inadequate, and they still hope improvements will be made in time for the Olympics. It is a stated aim of Visit Britain that the government to maximise the benefits of hosting the Olympics. That's easy to say, in my opinion, or not so easy as you just noticed, but fraught with the old lots and lots of words, no action. During the last ice age, winter temperatures outside rock shelters in southwestern Tasmania plummeted to 15 degrees below zero. Summers were cool and short. The terrain was rugged, but new research shows that the Aboriginal people were great survivors, getting their strength from the meat and bone marrow of wallabies, possibly with the occasional wombat brain thrown in as dessert. A La Trobe University archaeologist, Dr. Gillian Garvey, sorted more than 250,000 animal bone fragments from the Kutakinya cave on the Franklin River, where the hunters lived between 15 and 20,000 years ago, to build a picture of their prehistoric lifestyle. It showed they were well adapted to the harsh conditions. A discovery 30 years ago of the Kutakinya cave, one of the richest archaeological sites in Australia, was an important factor of the 1983 High Court decision to ban work on the Gordon below Franklin Dam, which would have flooded it. Other shelters were later found nearby, revealing the area was first inhabited at least 35,000 years ago. It took Dr. Garvey more than 8 months to sort through 40 kilograms of bone fragments, which had been excavated at the cave in 1981. Bennett's wallaby made up more than 90% of the remains of the hunter's prey, with wombats at 6% the next most common. Most wallaby bones were from the hind legs, suggesting that the hunters butchered their prey elsewhere and brought back the meatiest pieces. Most big wallaby bones were also split and had cut marks from stone tools. This suggests that people were also targeting the bone marrow. The hunters liked the front and back legs of wombats too, but there was also a surprisingly large amount of skull present. One possibility was that humans favoured the large wombat skulls to extract the nutritious brain. As many as 35 gunshots were fired at ancient petroglyphs near Fillmore in Utah, USA, and federal officials say the damage is irreparable. The rock panels were damaged last month, destroying the ancient art located southwest of Fillmore, the Bureau of Land Management reported. It's a shame that people do this, said Sherry Hurst, field manager for the Bureau of Land Management's Fillmore office. The petroglyph vandalism was discovered by a group of contractors taking inventory of the archaeological sites in the area. The rock art is believed to be thousands of years old and has been left untouched until May 2007. The damage is sadly irreparable. However, they will be taking steps to make the damage less apparent, with a professional rock art conservator inpainting the damaged panel. The Bureau of Land Management is offering a reward for information relating to the arrest and conviction of the vandals. And I implore people, anyone with information, please call 1-800-722-3998 or 435-743-3100. This is such a senseless act. I really do hope that these people can be caught. Archaeologists working on the site of the A38 Dobwalls Bypass in Cornwall in England have uncovered finds from the early Bronze Age dating back almost 4,000 years. Initial investigation, carried out on behalf of the Highways Agency by AC Archaeology, includes excavations which take place before the main work starts, in addition to observation of the removal of topsoil at the start of the scheme. Fragments of early Bronze Age pottery have been recovered from beneath a small mound of stones discovered during archaeological investigations near Loo Mills. Other items include prehistoric worked flint tools and waste flakes. The results of the analysis will be published in Cornwall's Archaeological Records after the end of the bypass work in September 2008. Archaeologists will continue to monitor the construction works throughout the scheme. A Neolithic long mound at Warden in Northumberland, England, is to be excavated in a two-week-long project. Long mounds, which are also called long cairns or long barrows, were generally constructed around 4,000 to 3,200 BCE and were places of burial for the residents of the British Isles during the Neolithic period. In the northeast, long mounds remain little understood, and whilst it appears that there are two major types in the region, only two have been subject to modern excavation in Northumberland and County Durham. This exciting new archaeological excavation project is a joint initiative between Volunteering Tynedale and Durham University. Volunteers will carry out the work under the supervision of the Archaeological Services Unit of the university. Thanks to the permission of the landowner, Philip Straker, the site will be investigated through open area excavation. Volunteering Tynedale will be inviting many of its registered volunteers to take part in the project, but staff are anxious to involve the local wider community. Volunteering Tynedale's manager, Mike Coleman, said this is a really exciting opportunity for the local volunteering community to receive specialist training in an environment in which they will undoubtedly gain valuable new skills, as well as allowing them to engage with their local heritage in a really hands-on way. They strongly believe that volunteering is for everybody and people need not be excluded from participating in this excavation research project because they are not currently registered. Anyone wishing to take part in the project should contact Volunteering Tynedale on 01434 601 201 or email them on info@volunteeringtynedale.org. The archaeologist at the Malibu location where an authenticated Clovis cultural era spear point was discovered in 2005 has announced the formation of a group to try to protect the site, which could date back 11,000 years, as well as raise public consciousness about the need for ways to address conflicts over site access with private property owners. Dr. Gary Stickle said the first aim of the organisation, called Friends of Far Point, is to immediately save the Far Point site for its proper preservation and conservation. To this end, the archaeologist said the group needs to foster a National Park Service connection to the site. Stickle said he has met with officials of the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area and discussed the possibility of a future Far Point exhibit, as well as enlist support from the NPS and other public agencies for the site's protection. the archaeologist said, the new organisation will also seek creative ways to enhance a cultural resource, emphasising the ability of the resources to provide potential answers to some of the many questions that exist about prehistoric North American migration and habitation. Anyone seeking more information about Friends of Farpoint can contact Stickle at 323-937-6997 or email him on DREGaryStickle@netzero.net. I'll just say that again. It's DREGaryStickle, STICKEL, at netzero.net. Key coastal sites which tell the story of Scotland's ancient past are in danger of being washed away, experts warned. Archaeologists said that historic treasures could be lost forever unless action is taken now. The most endangered sites include Iron Age remains in Shetland, Orkney and the Hebrides, where rare drystone brochs are threatened by global warming, rising sea levels, storms and erosion. Researchers from the charity Scape, the Scottish Coastal Archaeology and the Problem of Erosion, based at St Andrews University in Scotland, expressed concern over the situation. The charity is working with Historic Scotland to compile a list of significant historical and archaeological landmarks at risk from the waves. Almost a third of the coastline has been surveyed already, in an audit which names several sites as perilously close to disappearing. They include two prehistoric settlements at Baleshare in North Uist, which contain the remains of a circular stone house and pieces of pottery, bone and metal, an ancient settlement at Sandwick Bay in Shetland, where a 2,000-year-old skeleton was recently uncovered, is also thought to be at risk. The village, thought to have been inhabited between 3,200 and 2,200 BCE, was uncovered after a huge storm and high tides in the 1850s, when inhabited, the village would have been some distance from the sea, but as a result of relentless erosion, it now stands right on the shore. Tom Dawson, project officer at Scape, said climate change and an increase in stormy weather in Scotland could see more sites threatened. He said it could take just one period of adverse weather to lose pieces of Scotland's history forever. It's been predicted that within 100 years, because of climate change, there will be much more stormy weather in Scotland as a result. The coast will get battered even more than it is now. About 27 surveys of Scotland's coastline have been carried out since Historic Scotland began sponsoring periodic audits of the coast in 1996. But only now are experts starting to analyse the data. Mr Dawson said, in total, almost 30% of the coast has been looked at and about 11,500 archaeological sites have been found within 100 metres of the shoreline. Around 3,000 are in need of further assessment. The problem is that there are so many sites they will have to prioritise. A new paper from the June issue of Current Anthropology explores ancient multiple graves and raises the possibility that hunter-gatherers in what is now Europe may have practised ritual human sacrifice. This practice, well known in large stratified societies, supports data emerging from the different lines of research that the level of social complexity reached in the distant past by groups of hunter-gatherers was well beyond that of many more recent small bands of modern foragers. Due to their numbers, state of preservation, richness, and variety of associated grave goods, burials from the Upper Paleolithic from 26,000 to 8,000 BCE represent an important source of information on ideological beliefs that may have influenced funerary behaviour. In an analysis of the European record, there's a high frequency of multiple burials, commonly attributed to simultaneous death due to natural disaster or disease. However, a look at the grave composition reveals that some of the multiple burials may have been selective. Not only do the skeletons in these graves vary by sex and age, but the most spectacular sites also include a severely deformed individual with a pathological condition that would have been apparent since birth, for example, dwarfism or congenital bowing of the bones. These multiple graves are also richly ornamented and in choice locales. For example, the remains of an adolescent dwarf in Romito Cave in Calabria in Italy lie next to a female skeleton under an elaborate engraving of a bull. In the Sungir double burial in Russia, the skeletons of a preteen boy and girl are surrounded by ivory objects, including around 5,000 beads, each of which would have taken an hour to make. These findings point to a possibility that human sacrifices were part of the ritual activity of these populations, and they provide a clue on the complexity and symbolism pervading Upper Paleolithic societies, as well as links to magical religious beliefs. These individuals may have been feared, hated, or revered. For example, we do not know whether the adolescent received special burial treatment in spite of being a dwarf, or precisely because he was a dwarf. That's the typical thing where we actually throw up more questions than answers, usually. A University of Edinburgh Lemba Archaeological Research Centre team under the directorship of Professor Eddie Peltenberg has completed 4 weeks of excavations and unveiled ancient burial sites which provide an insight into religious and social rites of the period. The site near Paleopaphos is famous for being one of the earliest cemeteries in Cyprus belonging to the period of around about 3000 BCE. The excavations carried out by the team focused on the habitations of those people who were eventually buried in the cemeteries. Their settlement is located on a steep hillside, and this season the excavators were able to show how Chalcolithic people carved series of terraces on which they placed their houses. The remains were well preserved on the protected inner side of these terraces, and much evidence was gained on the lifestyle of the community. The settlers specialised in the production of the cruciform figurines of the type that will soon be gracing the new euro to be introduced into Cyprus. To our surprise, production was not confined to a particular workshop, with waste material from the manufacture of these cruciforms evenly distributed throughout the settlement in such a way as to indicate that the figures were fashioned by several groups. Time is running out for one of ancient Native America's most untouched and unusual sacred places. On June the 14th, and I'm afraid that's right now, Spruce Hill Works, a vast 2,000-year-old hilltop earthwork enclosure in Ohio, USA, will be going under the auctioneer's hammer. A local coalition, including the Ross County Park District and two non-profit organizations, Ark of the Appalachia Preserve System and Wilderness East, is trying to raise the $600,000 needed to save the 238-acre site. At the moment, the coalition has only come up with $175,000. Nancy Stranahan, co-director of the 2,500-acre Ark of Appalachia Preserve System, said that it will need a miracle. If these groups don't succeed, Spruce Hill Works will be likely purchased by a timber company or a developer. Many earthworks have been ploughed under or built on, so this one near pristine condition is important, especially to the native people. It's very hard to find ancient sacred places that haven't been tampered with or destroyed. All these artificial hills and earthen wall enclosures were constructed by indigenous people who'd arrived in the area about 2,000 years ago and embarked on a 500-year building campaign that left what appears to be a coordinated system of thousands of earthworks stretching from the Great Lakes to the Gulf of Mexico. As is the case with Spruce Hill Works, surviving mounds are at risk. Development continues apace in Ohio, and if a sacred site does not lie on federal land, national preservation laws do not apply. Ohio's state preservation laws do not, sadly, offer meaningful protection. For more information on Spruce Hill Works, visit www.highlandssanctuary.org. That was www.highlandssanctuary.org. Hill Forts, Prehistoric Strongholds of Northumberland National Park. This is the title of a new book launched on the 15th of May by English Heritage. It's an eye-opening new investigation of hill forts, the iconic prehistoric monuments that form such an integral part of Northumberland National Park. The book presents key discoveries from nearly a decade of research, conservation and interpretation, focusing on the well-preserved Northumberland's Iron Age hill forts. The meaning and purpose of these enigmatic monuments, dating to around 300 BCE, have intrigued people for centuries, most concluding that they served as fortified settlements. However, the new research reveals that many hill forts were built by farming families to show off to neighbouring communities. The defences of many hill forts were remodelled by just about every generation, ensuring that they remained smart and fashionable. Iron Age territories can still be identified in the landscape by tracing the extent of the land farmed by each community, and the people returned to the long-abandoned ruins of hill forts in the Roman period and built new settlements as an act of homage to their distant ancestors. Northumberland National Park has escaped the worst ravages of modern development and agriculture, so that all kinds of ancient remains are visible as humps and bumps on the surface, with the Countryside Right-of-Way Act making the uplands of the national park now accessible to walkers. This new guide allows even the most untrained eye to discover and analyse the traces of prehistoric and later activity throughout the park. Stuart Ainsworth, a co-author of the book, said that this book is not particularly about excavation or scientific analysis. It is about normal people using their eyes and their brains to identify and analyse traces of past activity that are visible to all of us. We don't pretend that we have all the answers in this book, but we want to encourage everyone to discover this beautiful landscape and to do some detective work for themselves. Now, that's more like it, getting involved. Remember, our past is all around to see. And on that happy note, can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, and a lively forum, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return to us again next week.